Mary. Hi, Mary. Hey. Mary or Mary
it's
Devin?
Mary Devin. We're all assholes about our names.
Okay. Yeah, we got a Michael, a Benjamin, and a Mary Devin. No Mikes, Bens, or Marys.
Yeah, here. Sorry.
Do people call you Ash?
Some friends do, sure. Ash is fine.
See, because he's not fussy like us.
Yeah.
I mean, people call me MD, but Mary is only half my name. That's the thing.
That's true.
Yeah.
MD is good too.
I answered Mary. Because
the idea of you being a doctor is amazing.
I know. Yeah.
Where are you right now? You're in Texas, Arlington, right?
I live in Fort Worth. I work in Arlington.
Cool. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So you are a professor of mechanical engineering.
That is correct. Cool. Barely a professor. I'm an adjunct.
All right. I think so. I reached out online to see if there was anyone who could speak on sort of futurist and like transhumanist possibilities from a leftist perspective. And I got like a lot of responses from people being like, I've read one science fiction book, I'll do your podcast. And then John was like, I know someone who actually knows a bit about that. Do you want to just let us know like what your background is in
like,
yeah, what does transhumanist mean? What is it?
Okay, yeah, let's start there. Let me open up Google real quick. Clickety clack. So transhumanism is the idea that eventually tech and science is going to allow humans to take some kind of active role in evolution or basically driving who and what we become next. It is very, very sci-fi. So I get that people have said, like, I've read some sci-fi. I read Neuromancer or Blade Runner, you know, something like that. So you can dial back millions of years, right? Like, we're products of our environment. It's just sort of whoever lived and had the kids, right, their genes got passed down, and that became who we are. Mm-hmm. And our society, our culture, it all just kind of comes out of our genetics too, right? Like, the things we think, it's because our brain allows us to think those things. So maybe in the future, if we don't, you know, blow ourselves up or kill each other, we'll eventually have the tech or the resources or the science, something, right, to be able to take an active role in kind of who we are and what we become. It is very sci-fi. It is, you know, if you read a lot of books, you watch a lot of TV, a lot of movies, there's a lot of good, a lot of cool ideas out there about maybe where we're going. Who knows where we're going to go? It's a good question.
And we're sort of starting to get there now. Like, people, now that we've, I don't know, I know as much about this as I cared to learn when I was 16 and like discovering psychedelics and not doing a lot of sleeping and reading about it. And then I sort of dropped off. But
it's a good place to go.
We're basically at the point where we've mapped the human genome and we're starting to figure out ways that we could possibly manipulate these genes before people are born is probably the first step, you would say, in like how this could start happening in the relative
So you mean like gene editing and designer babies, right?
Yeah, I guess that's one aspect. I mean, there's like so much to talk about with this, but
there's like real eugenicist pitfalls in transhumanism that I'm interested in talking about.
I mean, yeah,
there is
the Wrath of Khan, you know, like,
I don't know what that is. I mean, I know it's Star Trek, but I've never seen it.
I mean, basically, there's a dickhead who's really strong, and it's because he was the product of eugenics,
right?
And we have to defeat him.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. But,
sorry, that could be this like some like one of the first things that starts happening with.
It could be. There's going to be a lot of stuff kind of all happening at once. Just hitting a couple of topics real quick. Have y'all heard of biohacking?
Yes.
No.
Okay. All right. So for Mary Devin.
Yeah, she's the voice of the people.
Yeah, I'm the dumb one.
Biohacking is think of like people that are doing stuff in their garage, right? And we know that the scientists in the universities and the hospitals and stuff, they're spending, you know, millions, tens of millions of dollars to investigate all this stuff. And the biohacker is the do-it-yourself guy at home who just says, hey, I can embed that sensor in your skin for, you know, a couple hundred bucks. I'm just going to do it here in my garage with some buckets of ice. Mm-hmm. There are people who are doing that stuff. There are people who are embedding like Bluetooth and Wi-Fi sensors under their skin,
Jesus.
So that they can read like biometric data, and you can, you know, just send it directly to your phone. You can immediately get your heart rate and your blood pressure and all this kind of stuff.
So Apple Watch, too expensive. Can you do that with an Apple Watch? Yeah.
You can take the Apple Watch off, right? and people can see the Apple Watch on you. Or you can get mugged, and they can take your Apple Watch.
Right.
Yeah, if you Google this, like, it's very rough. I've seen people who are, you know, they'll get, like, a thing, like, implanted in their forearm or something.
Uh-huh.
And at this point, it's huge. Like, it's this big.
Right.
You want that? I don't particularly want that.
For reference, it was like about the size of like a cigarette pack just in your fucking arm.
Yeah.
So it's real rough right now, but yeah, we are actually really looking at the beginning. I saw one guy, I think he was a Brit. He got a sensor, it's like a little camera, and he got it implanted. It attaches to the back of his head, right where his neck meets his skull. And the camera looks at whatever he looks. And it detects the color, and the color turns into a tone, and he hears the tone in his ears from like a little speaker, and he has this because he's colorblind.
Mm-hmm.
So when he looks at things now, he hears a pitch, almost like synesthesia.
So let's talk about like possible objectives, for this. Like, there's a lot of like, oh, lifespan extension, and like there's a lot of biofeedback stuff where people are like tracking their pulse and their breathing, and like, I mean, like the idea that we're not already like sort of cyborgs is ridiculous, because we have access to like most of human knowledge at any point walking around with phones, you know what I mean? Like it would be like 50 years ago, it would be like if you were always in the library. Like wherever you were in the library.
And you also had you had 1,000 people who could just like go and collect information for you at any time.
Right.
Go get this book, and you go get this book, and then bring them together and correlate them for me.
Right. And so like, you know, it would be stupid to call it omniscience, because there's limitations to human knowledge, and there's limitations to what human knowledge you can access on your phone. But like, it's much closer to we are all much closer to omniscient than we were even 20 years ago.
Yeah, I understand. Take a bum off the street with a smartphone and compare him to somebody from like 1400. Mm-hmm. The least among us now know more and are more capable than the smartest, most intelligent person from, you know, 1,000 years ago.
Right, and so the work of like being a person in the world, like of like, thinking and knowing things is less about knowing facts and more about like triage and like navigating your way through massive amounts of information, most of which is irrelevant and some of which is erroneous, and like
I completely agree. It's just filtering. We have everything available to us, and it's just how much can you hold at once, right?
Yeah.
Like how many ideas can you keep in your head at one time?
So are you more of like a critic, or are you involved in some of this stuff? Like, do you have sort of little projects and self-experiments that you are working on?
So real quick, my background. I've got two of those BS degrees, biology and mechanical engineering. I got my PhD in mechanical. My research was actually about like computational methods and efficiency. If you're going to take a whole bunch of math and you're going to put it in a computer, how do you make it run fast? That was the idea.
Right.
But I applied it to nanoparticles. You all familiar with this? Have you heard of this stuff?
That was something I wanted to ask you about next. Okay. I guess feel free to like...
We just hit it right now.
Hit some 101 shit here.
Yeah. You hear people talk about nanobots, right? And they say, we're going to inject... Uh-oh.
You're breaking up a little bit.
Stream.
Could you run that back?
Do stuff. Have y'all heard people talk about nanobots, like tiny
yes,
robots?
Yes, like the Kurzweil shit. Like,
yeah.
Just explain everything to me. I've
okay,
never heard of
so
anything.
Okay, go ahead.
So nano. Anytime you hear the word nano, we associate it with something small.
Got it.
Jeff's
it literally
penis.
Means like 10^-9. Tiny. So something that's on the nano scale would be molecules. You think of like DNA. Uh-huh. DNA is about a nanometer. So people talk about nanobots, tiny little robots. We're going to put them in people. We've already been doing it. It's medicine. Anything on that scale is basically made out of, you know, molecules and particles and stuff like that. So a nanoparticle, a real common application would be like chemo.
Mm-hmm.
Think about like you go back in time, you know, 10 or 20 years. People get cancer. They get chemotherapy. It's basically poison. Right, and you're just pumping poison in your body and praying to your gods that it kills the cancer before it kills you.
Mm-hmm.
These days, what they're doing is they'll take a little spheroid of like a polystyrene, and they'll pack all of the cancer drugs into it, and they'll take some data from the patient, and they'll cover that little polystyrene sphere in proteins or charged particles, something like that, and they inject those into people, and the idea is it goes through your body. It doesn't attach to random places. Instead, it sticks cancer cells.
That's cool.
Attaches to those instead, and then it just passively diffuses all of this this chemo drug out, and it kills everything in the surrounding area, which is hopefully the tumor. Mm-hmm. And in that way, they don't have all these off-target effects and make people sick. That's effectively what nanobots are.
Like, okay.
We're already doing it.
But correct me when I'm definitely wrong here, but
sure.
It just got way louder all of a sudden. There we go. Basically, the difference is nanobots would be, now it's fucking computers. It's tiny little things with computational abilities, right?
Well, yeah. I'm not going to say you're wrong.
You can.
Something that small, right? What are you making it out of? You're making it out of like molecules, and molecules are already that small. We can't make it out of things smaller than individual atoms and molecules. So if you're going to make something interact with DNA and with proteins, you're basically building it out of DNA and proteins. It's just a human built protein. So on the molecular level, like in our bodies, proteins are basically like the things that get anything done. Like all of your enzymes are proteins. And anything that is like structural or accomplishes a task, that's usually a protein. So there are researchers out there who are building proteins, and they say this protein does not exist in the human body. Maybe we modeled it after something in nature, but we want it to do a particular thing, and we're going to do a custom build, and then we're going to inject it to people, and it's going to go do something inside of your body.
So the bot part of the nanobot. Mm-hmm. It's just really an analogy, and it's basically like a chemical that is a little bit more selective in how it functions, right? It's like the mechanism of action is like passive, or more passive than like a Roomba. You know what I mean?
100%. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We can't build like a computer chip, mm-hmm. and pack that computer chip into a little thing and send it in you. At least not yet. No time close. Even something bigger.
When could that start happening?
Yeah, it's all about scale, man. It's all about size. Imagine you wanted to put something into the blood. So your blood vessels are built structurally, the size. They're built for red blood cells and white blood cells to go zipping through you, right? So if you're going to put something in there, it can't be bigger than a blood cell.
Right.
Because capillaries are like one blood cell thick, one blood cell wide. So it's got to be the size of a red blood cell. And that's only like... 3 or 4 microns across, which is 10 to the negative 6 meters, right? So we're talking, take a human hair and cut it into like a 50th of the width. That's what we're looking at.
Just for perspective, like how small can are transistors currently? Like what's the smallest a transistor can be? How small is that?
Nanometer, I think.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Not
small.
I know a little bit about the electrical side of stuff, and I do a lot of programming. But when it gets to the hardware, I can give you kind of a fuzzy answer. I can give you a ballpark.
Yeah. So, how soon until there's more and more of this technology being used in medicine? Mm-hmm. And I guess who would have access to it, and who wouldn't? Under like our current framework,
like it's going to be for the rich.
Yeah, basically, are we developing these kinds of sort of like super medicines that some people are going to have access to?
Yeah,
that other people won't.
Will the blood robots be nationalized?
Here's a good way to gauge it. If you go online and you read stuff about researchers at this university are running this study and they're getting some really interesting results. look at the date, add a good 15 to 20 years. Because let's say it works. They still have to get it through federal regulations, and they have to do all kinds of animal trials, human trials, et cetera, and that's years, years and years, and like tens of millions of dollars before these things ever make it to any kind of actual treatments. There will be cases where they get human trials in there, and they'll have, you know, like small case studies, right? And those are usually done on a needs basis. So that's not necessarily for the rich.
So, I mean...
yeah, that's like if you have something where you're going to die anyway, they're like, well, this is good for you, good for me, you know, right?
Yeah,
is
that, so that's,
is
that that's called right to try.
Okay.
The right to try experimental drugs, and that's a pretty big topic right now, too. Like, there's some places that support it and some places don't.
Yeah, so your definition of, like, nanobot seems to accommodate stuff like CRISPR. Do you want to talk about that a little bit and who has access
to CRISPR? Yeah, CRISPR-Cas is amazing.
Yeah.
First of all, that name, the name CRISPR-Cas, if you look it up, what it actually is, there's a pathway in our bodies. It's natural. We all have it. And a group of researchers discovered that they could leverage this pathway to get something done. If you go back in time and you think about, people have always talked about like gene editing, right? And it was always this kind of like mythical thing. If we could go in and we could edit the genome, we could make superhumans and cure Huntington's disease and all this kind of stuff. And it was always sci-fi until it wasn't.
Right.
These guys came up with this way of leveraging it, and it's, when I say it's hot shit, like it's hot shit. It hasn't won the Nobel Prize yet. I wholly expect it will.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but it is incredibly promising.
So
it's really, really cool.
It's been a long time since I have learned anything about it. It's basically like, is it a virus? Is it like you're using viruses to identify like specific segments of DNA? Is that what's going on?
I understand. You can deliver a lot of stuff through viruses.
Mm-hmm.
Think of the virus as just like as like a container. Honestly, that's all a virus is. It's just a container.
Right.
What's up?
Oh, I was just thinking when I was talking about like passive mechanism of action, like a virus is a great example of that.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so viruses are really just like containers, and they come packing like dangerous sabotage, right? They got all kinds of dangerous stuff in them. So we've been doing this for a while. Research has been doing it for a while. You just pull the bad stuff out of the virus, right? You just put some good stuff in, and now the virus is working for you,
right?
And you can just inject some people with like a quasi flu, and it goes and it does its thing. What the CRISPR does, it identifies sections of a genome, and they can identify it using, imagine like, DNA is double stranded, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you got one side and you got another side, and the other side's basically the negative. So that's how we identify a lot of stuff, is like you put the negative in and the body goes and it finds the match. So this CRISPR pathway, they can put in, a bit of the genome that we're looking for, a copy of the gene, it goes and it finds it and it takes it, snips the two ends, literally takes that bit out and replaces it with the bit that you tell it to put in.
Right.
And
so
you're basically manipulating people's genes who are already alive, right?
Yeah, good point. So there's the can you do it for babies, like in utero, right, for a fetus? And then what do you do for people that are already around?
Right.
If, for example, if I have some kind of neurological degenerative disorder, right, and it's basically saying like Huntington's or something, like all of my neurons are going to go bad when I'm 55.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's some way we can prevent it. Maybe it's an external thing. Maybe you have to go in and change the genome in every single neuron in your body. Well, that's a little bit of a problem, right? Mm-hmm. But if you can do it for the fetus, that's a bit more promising. To hit on the thing you asked earlier, it's expensive. It is very expensive. It's estimated a lot of this stuff is only going to be available to millionaires, billionaires.
That's
the way it is.
We lost you for a second there. Only going to be available to who?
So like millionaires, billionaires,
right?
The ultra wealthy, and then the super wealthy, and then the wealthy, and then everybody.
And
a lot
also
of this stuff,
there,
though, yeah,
people,
what's that, Benjamin?
People have fears. I don't know if they're reasonable or not, but not just that people would be preventing things like Huntington's, but also that you could sort of select designer genes and like make really strong, really smart, fast, attractive people, like just a essentially like a different race if it became self-selecting enough. Right?
I understand. You go in.
Is that a reasonable fear or something that's possible? Like, especially because like with the current framework of who has access to this technology, like it's going to be a small group of people, and then if they have designer babies, those people are probably going to breed, and then it's just it's out of control, right?
Yeah, I understand. It's going to be a whole lot of things all at the same time. So the availability of the tech to the wealthy, that's going to happen. CRISPR specifically is really nice because the actual process of doing it is really cheap. It's just the regulations and the process of getting everything approved is going to be expensive and time consuming. There's already people who are doing CRISPR at home in their garages.
What do you mean?
Okay, go ahead.
What is, when you say doing CRISPR, you mean like changing genes in some?
Yeah.
So,
or at least trying to.
How do people do that in their garages?
So my understanding is that, first of all, I know that I'm not the expert, but I've loved this shit. My understanding is that viruses themselves, just in general, that viruses in the wild function by they infect a cell, they edit the DNA of that cell, or they edit the genetic information of that cell, so that that cell then produces more of that virus. Right? Is that accurate?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ways they can do it.
Okay.
Some of them will edit the genome, and they'll kind of HPV. Right, HPV gets into your genes.
Yeah, it does.
Hell yeah.
They do. Yeah, they did a lot of stuff. There are some viruses that just get in there and just actively hijack it, like in real time.
Okay.
They don't necessarily mess with the gene so much. They just go in and they tear it apart, and they turn the cell into a factory to produce more viruses.
Mm-hmm.
Ebola, for example, is so pernicious and dangerous because it's fast, and it gets in there, and it just immediately turns your cells into little factories for more Ebola virus. Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So,
go ahead.
So, imagine you have a virus, and then you manipulate it so that instead of editing the genetic material it would naturally edit, it edits whatever you want it to edit.
Right. I'm just so confused by people who aren't scientists. I don't even understand what it means to say manipulate. Like, what is the process like? How do you change a gene inside of your body?
I don't know.
Okay. That's what I'm saying. I'm talking about like the mechanics of like, even if you are a scientist, what does that look like? Don't you have to take something out and put it back in? What do you do? What's happening here?
So on the table in front of y'all, you see that cord that you have that's all kind of coiled up just like the mic cord?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Think of that as your DNA.
Okay.
A little bit of that cord is bad. Right. So you go in there and you open it up and you stretch it out.
How do you touch the DNA?
Okay. So the human doesn't. These are good questions.
Okay.
Perfectly good questions. The human doesn't literally touch any of this stuff.
Yeah.
Imagine we're able to build a whole bunch of little robots that go in and do it for us.
Okay.
And when I say robots, really, I just mean proteins. In your body right now, there's
And they attach to the negative, like you were talking about with the cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's a match. Like in DNA, there's just these stick to those, and those stick to these, all this kind of stuff, and they just go along. So if you were ever to unwind it and just
for the
take
listeners,
one half,
he was taking his fingers and doing the scissoring thing.
Yeah.
No, that's something different.
Yeah.
That's how you make more DNA. So you have all these proteins in your body already, and it's their job to interact with the DNA and to coil it and uncoil it and make copies and cut it and splice it and edit and do all this kind of stuff. So the researchers basically just say, we have all of these tools at our disposal. Let's make them work for us. So they engineer the system. They go and say, we need a little of those and a little of those. We're going to stick this onto this thing. And they send the proteins into the cell, and they go in, they uncoil that bit of DNA, they clip out the bad part, insert the good part, and then they fuse it back together.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Thank you for explaining it so clearly.
Sure.
So, like, when you say people are doing in their garages, you mean people who are scientists who, like, know what they're doing?
I saw a couple of stories in the news. Like, one guy decided he was going to do a CRISPR-Cas experiment, and he wanted to inject like the genes of some like bovine or something, like muscle genes.
Oh,
and he wanted to make himself really strong. Like he went home and he did it.
This rules.
It absolutely didn't work.
No, he got a disease or nothing happened.
Yeah, I think nothing happened.
Okay.
You know, yeah. We're gonna do this. Don't if somebody says, "Hey, you know, I can give you gills for $50." Don't
no,
do it.
I won't even make homemade kombucha. So, yeah, okay. Not doing that.
Hey, okay. Some people are gonna be really, really bold in their experiments. I don't endorse it. Not so, yet, anyway.
No.
But I guess
I know people who have like 3D printers and stuff and CNCs in their garages that they've built. You know, that's it's going to be the exact same kind of thing.
Just what are their people... names and addresses?
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't. All, yeah. It's Sean. Yeah.
He's just going to show up. Next time Sean's on the podcast, he's going to show up just fucking jacked and he's going to have a completely different head.
I feel like he just have like 3D printed like stupid little knives or something he was trying to do tricks with.
Something asinine.
Y'all printed a gun.
So how close are we to people being able to basically in utero create designer babies?
That's a good question.
Benjamin really wants a hot baby.
We've been able to eliminate certain genes. Like there's people just running experiments and there's people making papers and they just say like, we took a mouse embryo and we targeted this specific gene and we got like 99.9% replacement, things like that, right? Did y'all see the story out of China?
No.
Which one?
You got to be waiting. There's a lot
okay,
of stories.
There's lots of stories out of China, lots of stories out of Hong Kong. There was a Chinese researcher last year, maybe, who came out and said he did this CRISPR-Cas process on human embryos. And people like the whole community basically just said, like, what the fuck, man? Like, you can't do that, dude.
Yeah.
And a lot of people got upset.
What was he doing to the embryos?
What's that?
What was he doing to the embryos?
I think he was trying to splice in something to, you know, like an intelligence gene or something like that, which there's not any just one gene.
Right. It wasn't like making sure they didn't have a neurodegenerative disease or something like that. It was like,
oh, I think it was a gene that's shown to be like protective against AIDS, maybe, or something like that.
Oh,
it was a preventative gene.
That doesn't feel that bad.
Well, I mean, the problem
but
is
only
the problem
some
is
people
not...
have access to it and some people
yeah,
don't.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
That's
yeah,
the
that's
whole
the
question
eugenics.
With this.
Well,
right.
And also the problem isn't necessarily, I mean, there's a whole bunch, like a lot of ethical qualm shit about like
qualm shit,
like creating designer babies successfully. But there's also, a lot, I mean, like CRISPR is not like 100% accurate, and
right?
It's
so it could fuck up, right.
Right? Yeah,
off-target effects,
right?
Also, there's some genes that they get like 0% replacement, and nobody really knows why. And also, if you just go, you know, screwing with this stuff, does the kid grow up happy and healthy? Like, does it have other effects?
Right.
You don't know.
Gonna make monsters.
Ethical way you would do it, I guess, would be to do it in a whole bunch of other animals first, right? As ethical as that gets.
Right.
And then let those animals grow up, right? And then let those animals breed.
Right.
And then look at their babies, right? And you have to look at like the third and fourth generation down. Do the genes get passed along successfully?
Right.
Are their offspring also immune to HIV or whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, like we're just kind of diving into the gene pool here and swimming to the bottom and fiddling with the filters and hoping everything turns out okay.
Just give your kids PrEP as soon as they hit puberty. We nailed it.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That's pretty good, too.
Okay, so... oh, fuck, what was I going to say? Oh, let's talk... Can we talk a little bit about privacy? So, something that I, when I was an undergrad, I wrote a paper, a very shitty paper for a very stupid class about like data science and genome information. So like, so let's say you have a database of 1,000 people's genomes. You also have a database of like what diagnosable illnesses they have, and then you like see what those. Like everyone who has Alzheimer's, see what genes they have in common, like what mutations they have in common, or whatever, right? So, like, for one, I think that would probably require an insane amount of computational power that, like, maybe isn't even possible just by virtue of like how much information. But also, like, it's not like you can have an anonymized genome. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's your DNA. You can't like you can't be like, here is someone's DNA because it's their fucking DNA. Do you know what I mean? Does that make sense?
They are, yeah.
I understand. Patient data. I mean, there's all kinds of issues with that. Like, you go and get your genome sequenced, and you find out that you're high chance of getting some disease, and your employer says, "Oh, well, that means you're going to be really expensive to insure,
right?
And now your job's in danger." I totally get it, man. Yeah.
Jesus.
To hit on that first part, though, as far as the correlation aspect of it, right? If you have all this data, what can you do with it? That is something people are doing right now. Mm-hmm. Is they're taking all of this patient data, and they're doing just mass correlation against diseases and conditions. Mm-hmm. It's done. I would say most of it is done with good intent. Like the right. hope is that we could be preventative with it. And also with that kind of like large data set analytics, artificial intelligence, right, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The hope is that they can alleviate the burden on an overburdened medical system.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of how many physicians you go in to see the doctor and you have these, this is your blood pressure, right, and this is your BMI, et cetera, and they diagnose you with something. It is being shown we are developing systems that are more accurate than the physicians can be,
mm-hmm.
just because, again, like how much data can a human think about at
right.
a time, right? So if the computer is able to say, like you put in all your biometrics, and the computer comes back and says, hey, you have this percent chance of getting diabetes, this percent chance of cardiovascular disease, this kind of thing, for most people, I think most people would want it. Like if you sold it to a consumer, right? Most people would say, hey, that is to my benefit. I'm okay with this. The pernicious and dangerous part is like what happens when all of that stuff gets, when all the servers get hacked.
Right.
Right. Because they will get hacked.
Right.
And then everybody's, it's not just your personal information. It's not your social security number. It's literally your genome that is now available online to the highest bidder.
Right.
Yeah.
What are the biggest fears with that happening?
What's that?
What could go wrong just for people who haven't thought about that?
I understand. Like what is the literal danger of that other than just, feeling a little like somebody called you up on the subway? Imagine that we were able to say like whole swaths of the population in this part of the country is susceptible to these kind of diseases or they are allergic to these kinds of chemicals, right? Something like that. I would say it puts us all at personal liability. I mean, there's also like a security and danger part
of
it too.
Yeah, if there was like something that made a certain segment of the population seem like danger to public health, the government would absolutely secretly kill them. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's also a lot of people out there who would really, really love it if science backed up their poor opinions of people.
Yes. Oh, God. They would love it so much.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
some
man.
Of these things, there's
new
no, like,
phrenology, man.
Gene,
what's that?
There's no like single intelligence gene or something.
Right. Yeah.
But if we found a gene somewhere that made people more active or something, and we're like, oh, how about we go dig through the different races and populations
right.
and stuff and find out who really isn't very active?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jews.
I would say maybe those correlations can be made. There's probably not a whole lot of merit in it, and there's certainly no there's no good intentions in that.
No.
If we can use it as a preventative thing for diseases and genuinely improve people's quality of life, I think it's worth pursuing.
But who would be in charge of that? That is crazy to think about. Like, man, like who? What sort of body would be in charge of that information?
I mean, legislative bodies and regulatory bodies are like kind of. By nature conservative, like it's really hard to pass a law in the United States by design or whatever. There's no way legislation is ever going to keep up with technology.
That's true.
Because technology- it's going to be whatever company is doing the technology.
Right.
So how much of this is currently like government funded by various governments throughout the world and how much of it is like private sector stuff?
There's some governments that are moving a little bit quicker. The U.S. is we're not the fastest, mm-hmm. right? Again, by design. The EU is addressing issues like this. Japan is. China's got a real interesting approach to things, man. This is in no way an endorsement of China. They're basically a government run by statisticians and mathematicians and engineers and stuff. It's a government of like fascist bean counters.
Mm-hmm.
But they will absolutely step out ahead of things if they have to.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all saw this is going back probably 6 months, 9 months, something. Zuckerberg, Facebook had to go to Congress and you know, give testimony and stuff. And these senators came out with like print offs of Facebook, you know, and they're asking them questions like, now how do you make money? And it's like a retirement home.
Right.
These guys are never going to be able to get out in front of the ball. The system is just designed to move too slowly. And I think as we go farther and farther, like things are only going to move faster and faster. So if we want the government to regulate this kind of stuff or to be proactive, right, or some kind of aggressive legislation, I don't know, man. Maybe more. We have to vote.
Right? It is hilarious that currently the way that we're like legislating that is like just congressmen asking, like, why doesn't my nephew talk to me, like to Mark Zuckerberg? And China's like, we're making an organ right now. We're making a brain right now.
Yeah.
So you know. One of your areas of expertise that you mentioned was in artificial organs, right?
It's more of an interest than expertise. I know a good bit about a handful of projects that are out there. I can speak to lungs, heart, pancreas.
So how long till I can get new lungs?
and liver. There are artificial lungs out there right now. They're not great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's quick distinction. Consider the difference between like wholly synthetic versus like obviously like a donor, something like that, versus something that's kind of in between. So for example, just take a lung. There are synthetic lungs that are just like inflatable bags and they're not great.
Yeah.
You can get donor lungs, right, from someone who is recently deceased. You know, there is a whole other group of people, whole other group of researchers where they will take organs, actual organs, and they will effectively digest them, and they'll strip out all of the cells, and what's left is imagine just like all the connective tissue, and it's just like the skeleton of the organ, right? No bones, but it's just you know, all the fibers and stuff. And into this, they will embed a whole bunch of stem cells, patient stem cells, your stem cells, right? And then they'll put into some kind of bioreactor, basically, and they let it cook for like a month. And their hope is that they can get these stem cells to differentiate in a particular way and to grow onto the existing structure such that eventually it becomes a lung.
Wow.
Is the goal to have to create an organ that the patient is less likely to reject because it's their stem cells?
Correct.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
It would be your cells. It would effectively be another one of your lungs. Doctor says, hey, Michael, you need a lung? We can get you a lung. It's going to take a couple of months. We're on back order.
Right? Yeah.
The factory is very busy right now.
Right.
But we can get you a lung in 4 months. And they take a little swab of the inside of your cheek. They reverse differentiate those cells back into stem cells. They make them grow. And then they just embed those in this this lung skeleton, basically.
So
they grow you a new one.
When can I get like lab-grown meat that is grown with my stem cells so I could eat myself?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But wait, is there any ethical concerns for, obviously that, yes, but like what Michael said, but are there ethical concerns for the lung made with your own stem cells? Like, besides access?
Not the top of my head. Like, I mean, access is always going to be a big one.
Right.
That's
right.
Going to be an expensive process.
Right.
Right.
But in terms of like horror movie setup.
We went to Catholic school, so we got a lot of shit about stem cells.
Yeah. But if it's your stem cell, you don't have to kill a baby. I don't really know what a stem cell is, but you know.
You want the 30-second crash course?
Do it.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's an undifferentiated cell. All that means is you get knocked up. You got this little ball of cells in your uterus that's growing, and there's nothing, like there is no skin cell or muscle cell or brain cell, right? They're just these like little blobs, right? And they have the potential to become anything.
So they're only in utero. They're only during like in the very beginning stages of conception. Is that when stem cells
you
occur?
You find them in some other places rarely. But in for the most part, yes.
That's it's the best way to
when we
to
were
get
all
them.
Just
you're cutting out.
You're cutting out. They're all just what?
But you can take like a stem cell and turn it back into a stem cell.
You can take a what?
You can take like a skin cell. They can just get some cells from the inside of your cheek or something, or get some of your skin cells and just, you know, they hit it with the chemicals, right? And they coax it and they give it a little massage and they tell the bedtime stories.
Yeah.
And it turns back into a stem cell.
Oh, wow.
Have they ever accidentally turned it into an incel? Where it just grew Joker makeup.
No more incels.
All right.
Let's take all the incels and engineer them into, you know, like fully functioning adults.
Well, that'd be so great. Another ethical quandary or qualm, whatever, Q word, with growing organs is the potential to basically just have an infinite supply of organs for people, and they wouldn't have to die.
Just, the doctor goes to the cabinet or the pharmacist, even, right? Or maybe you just go to Walmart one day and it becomes shrink wrapped or something.
This I feel like eventually
is easy enough.
Eventually, if the body's old enough, I don't know, right? Like, eventually, there's just aging that's going to occur, like, because you can't replace your bones, you can't replace, like, you can't very easily replace, like, it might be easier to replace a lung than it is to replace a heart. Or actually, which one is easier?
The lung.
They both seem very hard.
Two of them, right?
But like your brain, there's never going to be a brain transplant. Like at some point, no matter how advanced technology gets, even if we live to be 140, like people are going to eventually die.
Wasn't there a head transplant at some point?
Absolutely. That seems so stupid. What?
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
What was it?
It was they tried to move a head to a new body.
Yeah.
How'd that go?
I mean, look at me.
I agree. The brain's a hard one. You know, try to move someone to a new brain. You can replace the heart. There's mechanical hearts now. There's, you know, synthetic, like wholly synthetic lungs, all this kind of stuff. The liver is pretty interesting. You can take like chunks of liver and get it to regrow itself.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Today in America, the organs we need the most is the heart and the kidney. Actually, you think of all the old people on dialysis,
right?
There is some interesting work.
We could have saved Osama bin Laden if we had.
it's heart, kidney, and I think liver is next. Mm-hmm. As far as the bones, that's an interesting point. Your bones are actually always rebuilding themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's little cells in your bones that tear them down, and there's other little cells in your bones that build them back up. It's just that when you get old, like your bones get kind of brittle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have as much calcium and stuff in there, and things start wearing down. Some things we can do replacements. Other things there's people looking to like regeneration. Maybe regeneration of brain tissue. Hard to say. My concern with all of this stuff is that obviously it's only going to be available to some people. And then I'm going to sound like a dick for saying this, but some people maybe don't deserve it. Like if Putin could put his head in a jar and be president of Russia forever.
Right.
Or Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah, that's classic Epstein stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Epstein, not
so,
Epstein.
You know, what do you do about countries where there's no term limits, where they have monarchies or dictatorships or something?
Yeah. No, that's very true. There's a lot of people that should die, like, normally.
Classic turnover.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude, oh, God, imagine, like, a Supreme Court that was just the same people forever.
God, we got to let Ruth Bader Ginsburg die at some point. We better not figure that, like, she's fine, but if RBG. We give that bitch a heart that lets her live for 40 more years, I'm going to blow my fucking brains out. I'm so sick of people being obsessed with Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Sorry.
But I mean, this could be like, this is probably going to happen in our lifetime that we're going to have to figure these questions out, and probably sooner than most people would expect, I'm guessing, right?
I agree with you. I think it's happening faster than people expected. Now that we're into it, like when you're in the middle of the research and stuff, we have an appreciation for how long it's going to take. Go back 10 or 20 years, nobody even knew we would be here at this moment, mm-hmm. right? Like it's sci-fi until it isn't. Once people start doing it in the lab, then you basically have a timeline. So if you're able to read it in the news that somebody did this particular thing, you know, just tack on like 10 or 20 years. It's a ballpark. If it's just something people are saying, hey, this would be really cool. Elon Musk is starting a company where he wants to copy people's brains into a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, man.
Yeah.
cool. Good luck with that.
I haven't thought about him in a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he like crashed into Mars and died already.
He's still too fucking stoned from going on Rogan that long time. He just had to chill out. Go to the chill out tent for a little bit.
Dude, Shane Moss should have him on for a DMT trip.
Yeah. Oh, God, no. I don't want to know what happens when he enters the spirit realm.
What did I want to ask you about? Oh, so how up are you? This is not quite transhumanism, but how up are you on, like, antibiotic-resistant bacteria right now? Because that's something I think
about it. Sure,
that's something I think about a lot. Is like,
are we ever going to be able, or are we going to get to a point where we can't fight these diseases?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Superbugs and stuff.
Superbugs and like alternative, like antibiotic approaches.
Yeah, methicillin-resistant staphylococcus.
Right? Hell yeah, dude.
We're going to have to get clever in our approaches. So. Here's another example. This is actually going back to the nanoparticles thing.
Mm-hmm.
We talked earlier about, you know, like spheroids covered in proteins and stuff. There's some other people who are taking basically like cylinders of metal, and that's all it is. It's a tiny little cylinder of metal, and they can find ways to get that cylinder of metal inside of a bacteria,
mm-hmm.
and then they hit it with a magnetic field that makes that cylinder spin, and it acts like a little... Like it churns up the insides of the bacteria and mechanically rips it apart.
Yeah, that's wild.
So, yeah, that is wild.
So it's like if you swallowed a watch and then went into an MRI machine, just like.
Oh God, dude! Yeah, that'd be terrible. Don't do that.
Anyway,
it's basically that, just on a really small scale. We flush a lot of bacteria antibiotics down the drain, right?
Yeah.
And the danger there is that we're wiping out the population of the ones that we're capable of killing. And the only ones that are left are the ones that we can't.
Right.
Naturally, those are going to breed. So at the end of the day, we're just left with all the enemies that we can't kill.
Also, you hear about like all these like old strains of bacteria that are going to be unearthed from all
the ice.
Like, ice melting.
Oh, the melting permafrost and all this?
Yeah, all these
what do you think about
ancient
that?
Diseases.
Is that real?
Is it real?
Is
yeah,
that,
it's real.
Are we going to get...
it's like a carbon bomb. Have you all seen the footage of like northern Russia where the permafrost is melting?
No.
Oh, it's really sad. I'm about to bring it down for a minute.
Bring it down, yeah.
So if you take a bunch of biological material, plants, trees, and you freeze them, they die, right? It's not like you're dropping them down cold enough to like preserve them. Mm. It's just frozen dead trees and grass. And as long as they're frozen, they're not actively decomposing. They're under layers of ice.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as like Siberia melts, right? The permafrost melts. You're exposing all of this, you know, 10,000-year-old grass. Which then begins to just decompose in the sun, mm-hmm. and as it decomposes, it gives off CO2 and methane.
Right.
So it's a massive carbon bomb is about to go off.
Oh,
it's
no.
a positive feedback loop. Very dangerous.
It's well, and okay, so it's going to get hotter, and we're also going to get sick because of the stuff in the dead plants.
And it's going to get hotter faster because of the dead plants.
You're
going to
see
farting.
Outbreaks of disease. You're going to see
new ones or old ones.
Could be new ones. I don't know on that.
Cool.
they're very well could be old ones coming back. New things come around.
What about in New Orleans where everything's just sort of underwater and very hot already? How's that going to work?
Can it be worse in New Orleans? It's been a year or two since I've been down there.
Something that I noticed when I was growing up, my parents, I don't know if this is true at all, but we would pass like banana trees and I would be like, why don't we eat those bananas? They're like, oh, they don't ripen. We're too far away from the equator. They don't ripen. I'm like, I'm passing fucking ripe ass bananas.
Yeah, that's scary.
It's creepy. Yeah.
Yep.
Also, it's 90 degrees right now and it's October 6th. Yeah.
Yeah. It, trust me, it's hot as hell in Texas as well.
Yeah.
And as soon as it's not hot anymore, it's going to swing to like a wet season and then it's going to swing to like a crazy cold season. People would say climate change or global warming. Really what it is, it's we are making the whole system unstable.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to see cold places get hot, hot places get cold, wet gets dry, dry gets wet. And maybe if you give it enough time, it will stabilize into something new, mm-hmm. right? And then ecosystems will rebound, et cetera, et cetera. But we're in the transition period, and the transition periods are the most dangerous. There are several periods throughout Earth's history where the ecosystem has changed rapidly, and people, vast amounts of species have died, mm-hmm. right? You can look at Cambrian, I think. They all have these names. You know, the different epochs where, like, the massive dyings happened. Yeah, maybe that's a different podcast. But,
yeah.
I mean, this is all very interesting to me.
Yeah, what's her name? Is it Elizabeth Kolber who wrote The Sixth Extinction? We were just talking about this book. But she makes the argument that we are in the middle of a massive die-off.
I mean, I think it's pretty demonstrably like proven that we're in the middle of a massive die-off.
Well, sure, but she's just making the argument like this is on the order of
one of these historical
the last five that have names because they were so huge. Yeah.
So I guess I don't know. I think it's important to know about how drastically the environment's going to be changing for all of this and, the human consequences of these things. There's going to be so many people moving throughout the world.
Climate refugees.
Yeah, so many climate refugees. All of this is happening at the same time as, transhumanist technology is starting to hit pretty much at the exact same time. I guess, I don't know. Is there a way for it to benefit people besides just a small swath of the ultra elite?
I understand. You're right, man. These we're running both races at the same time, right? And there's a lot of technocrats who think that technology is going to save us from climate change. The medical science and all of that engineering and tech is going to keep going, right? It's not like the species, we're all going to be dead in 20 years or something. Technology is going to keep rolling forward. We're going to keep finding new cures. While all that is happening, all of the effects that we see of climate change are just going to get worse and worse. And the U.S., for the most part, is going to be fairly well insulated. There's places in the U.S. where you're already seeing examples of it. Louisiana, for example, there's a bunch of real estate in South Louisiana that's going into the water. Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of islands out on the coast of, I think, Virginia. They're getting covered. The U.S. has a bunch of assets out in the Caribbean, and those are getting just annihilated every year, just year after year with hurricanes.
Hawaii is a state.
Yep. There was, I think it was Missouri maybe this year, there was massive flooding, and the flooding is all exacerbated by climate change. Mm. And because of the flooding, you're looking at the economic toll, obviously, but the human toll, people's entire lifestyles are wiped out, loss of food. There's a whole bunch of things that we eat that only grow in certain places at certain times of the year. And imagine that, what happens if the ecology in that specific region gets upset? Then this thing that we love so much, okra, whatever, right? That particular thing could just disappear from our food palate.
Mm-hmm. Especially if there is this sort of trend of, nations sort of cutting off from other nations, and we're importing, say, rice, from a country, and that country is like, well, we're just going to try and feed ourselves, and we've decided not to grow rice. We're fucked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people become protectionist, more nationalist, right? They take care of the internal problems. If China starts having massive famines, their number one concern is to feed the Chinese. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand, man. Food scarcity is going to become a problem. Not like it's not a problem already. There's 8 billion of us on this rock, and there's people all over the world who are hungry, including here in the United States already. So think of the instabilities politically are just going to be exacerbated by lack of water. Lack of access to food, right? And that's going to lead to what? Riots, mobs, civil war.
So I guess let's do a very unscientific thing here and just wildly speculate on ways this could go down. Let's say 100 years from now, transhumanist technology continues at its rapidly accelerating pace, because that's sort of what we're seeing. Is it was very slow, all of a sudden we're start at the beginning of a period of it replicating itself at rates that we can hardly even imagine.
Rapid growth.
So what does it look like if there is like a mass of people that take control of this and it starts helping like most of humanity? And then what does it look like if there are just like die-offs and a small group of people like basically hoard this?
You mean like the over under, like a like good case, bad case?
Right.
Yeah.
Good case. Good case is we'll start there. That's nicer. Good case is we revolutionize our energy systems, and we're able to actually start going carbon negative, which means we can pull some CO2 and methane out of the atmosphere already. We can pull it out of the water so the water doesn't become acidic, and we can compensate for the effects of climate change. Technology continues. You can measure in terms of lifespan. I would also measure in terms of quality of life, especially for older people. Like, do you want to be 140 if you're wrapped in plastic,
no.
Right? And you can't go anywhere. imagine that real quick on kidneys, for example. There's so many people on dialysis. There's a you can Google the Kidney Project, and that's just one group out there. And they're making a synthetic kidney. It looks like it's maybe the size of a cup of coffee. It's a little it's a little box, basically. They could get those, and they could put those into every adult whose kidneys are failing, and dialysis becomes a thing of the past, right? And we don't have to worry anymore about kidney failure. I've seen people who are developing systems for combating diabetes, right? Artificial hearts, artificial lungs. If things go good, lifespans can continue to go along, and really then what kills you, like if you're replacing all your parts, right, then it's catastrophic traumatic death or neurological disease, something like that. Maybe lifespans can hit up to like 150. That'd be really cool. Things go poorly. When things go bad, they tend to go bad very quickly, right? So we would be basically looking at massive loss of ecological systems. Collapse of food, water, energy systems, things like that. Consider what's going on in several parts of the world right now. Like, you can look at many places in the world that are having like nationalist or fascist blowbacks. Some of that's in response to what's the right way to say it? Migration, right? Or a lot of immigration. There's places in the world where people don't like that. Throw into that economic instability, right? And you have a greater opportunity for
scapegoating of immigrants,
Orwellian dynamics, right? Or hell, even Huxley, if y'all are fans of Huxley, right? Brave New World isn't exactly the world I want to go into.
No,
I would say that's the bad. The bad is that when things go south, it allows dictators and demagogues to take over.
Okay. But also, just wild speculation from moron over here, too. The people that survive now can have babies with new crazy genes. And
well,
there's essentially a new species that starts to emerge.
I mean, consider that.
I suppose would probably merge with like robotics and artificial intelligence.
I mean,
right?
you're operating on the assumption that our infrastructure survives, like the massive the massive transport, like the massive transplantation of lithium from point A to the other side of the globe that's required to like have batteries.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so
if there was global warfare, we wouldn't all be cooperating with each other.
Well, also. I mean, like if there was like an apocalyptic,
if they get robots to do it, man, I don't know. Like,
well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like,
couldn't they?
Like, I think that this scale of motherfucker, I think that this scale of like, of catastrophe involves the collapse of infrastructure, which makes a lot of these technologies, and like it involves a massive loss of human knowledge and a massive loss of like, yeah. So
these things have happened before.
So it's not like there's some sort of post-apocalyptic utopia where we like get to keep everything that we learned. Do you know what I mean? And all the technologies that we had before, like the internet is already just like barely functioning,
right?
You know. Anyway.
It's like a house of cards.
What's the... go ahead.
Europe lost the toilet for 1,000 years. Just throwing that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Wait, they had it and it went away? What happened?
Yeah, they had toilets in Rome.
Oh, yeah, wow. I didn't know that.
The Dark Ages.
I've never read a book. I don't know anything about toilets, but...
So, what...
bidets only.
Yeah. Well,
they had toilets in Rome, and they didn't.
So, stop me if this is outside of your area of expertise.
They flushed?
Sure.
They had pipes? Okay, just... Okay.
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't look at me.
All right.
Yeah. So, what is the state of carbon capture technology right now that you know of?
It's cool. Carbon capture is very interesting stuff.
It's trees.
there are people, Bill Gates, for example, is putting a lot of money into this. Mm-hmm. What it looks like visually, it looks like a wall of fans. And obviously you have to power the fans, right? So it's consuming electricity. So just go ahead and, you know, accept the fact that you're going to burn energy to get this done.
Right.
But you actively move the air over a series of substrates filled with basically catalysts.
Mm-hmm.
And it induces chemical reactions to occur that take CO2 out of the air and bind it into other things. So the idea is maybe we could turn the CO2 directly into something like a biofuel,
right.
Ethanol, something like that. And that's effectively like a synthetic photosynthesis.
Mm-hmm.
If you could bind it into something that's not usable, right, something inert, right? Oh, we created this like useless dust out of CO2. That's still a good thing because there's less CO2 in the atmosphere.
Right.
It is an energy expensive process. So how do you monetize it is the better question. Because, you know, we know that it's not going to happen unless somebody's making money off of it. People mm-hmm. aren't going to do these things out of the goodness of their heart. Maybe some people will, but, this particular case, I'm not sure how they're planning on monetizing it or if that's even their goal, but I do know he's pumping a lot of money into the carbon capture tech.
Okay.
So right now the biggest obstacle to carbon capture as a way to move towards carbon neutral or carbon mm-hmm. negativity is the energy expenditure required to do it.
It's expensive, which means people aren't going to do it without a reason.
Mm-hmm.
But also, in order to offset the amount of CO2 and methane that we are producing, it would be carbon capture on a mass scale.
Right.
And what's funny is you could do the job just as well by planting more trees.
Well, there's a ceiling though on how much carbon you can recapture with planting trees.
Yeah.
You
look at what's happening in like Brazil, right? They're cutting down all of the rainforest. The rainforest, it's like the lungs of the planet, man.
Are there people still, I mean, I'm sure there are. Are there people still researching alternative methods of carbon recapture? Like the whole pulling nitrogen out of the atmosphere to fertilize soil. Most of the planet would have starved a long time ago if we couldn't like get ammonia from thin air. So and that process we stumbled upon by accident. How to what extent have we exhausted the possibility that there's a more efficient way of doing it, like several orders of magnitude more efficient, like a passive process?
Orders of magnitude, I don't think we can hit that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, if you're building something in tech and you can get a couple of percent better, that's usually a big deal.
Right.
There are absolutely people looking at it. It's usually with the efficiency of the catalysis process, because you know, the fan itself is, you know, you just run the fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the components required to go into the machine itself are very, very expensive,
right.
Or if it uses very like exotic materials, then the upfront cost is what's expensive as well. Carbon capture is important. You would basically have to couple that with, you know, revolutionizing our energy generation system to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
If we're just going to keep producing CO2, and we're going to try to offset it with carbon capture, we would probably do better by ditching both and just finding a better way to generate electricity in the first place. I mean, the real answer is do carbon capture and find better ways to generate electricity.
One of the go-to arguments of like the right wing of the right wing and of like other kinds of like libertarians and shit is like is that like essentially planned economy could not possibly be as efficient as a free market. What are the opportunity, like what's the potential of AI for essentially planned economy? That's a large question probably.
No, that's a really good question too. Classically engineers don't touch economics much just because it, the math
neither do economists.
So ambiguous.
Yeah.
What's that?
I said neither do economists.
Yeah, man. They're just it's magical guesswork, right?
Yeah,
it's
thinking. Yeah, it's astrology, but for Republicans.
That's good.
I do think we could use AI in a lot of those applications. I know a bit about AI, and I've worked a couple AI problems. I've never done it in the realm of economics. Mm-hmm. As for whether or not I could, you know, the free market economy just dominating everything, I tend to not, like, my brain just kind of turns off mm-hmm. when people go too far into that. The idea of a purely free market economy just seems silly to me. Mm-hmm. First of all, it seems brutal.
Yeah.
Right? Winner take all is inherently
barbaric.
Yeah. And lacking in empathy, right? If it came down to it and we said, you know, the planned economy is going to be this and the free market economy is going to be that, maybe in the free market economy, the GDP is a little bit higher and the rich get a little bit richer, something like that. I would still take the planned economy because it gives us the opportunity to say that there's going to be minimums, minimum mm-hmm. quality of life, minimum income, something like that. We're going to guarantee that every American who's willing to work 40 hours a week gets at least this kind of lifestyle. Mm-hmm. I would take that in a heartbeat, even if it ended up being less efficient. And I know that I'm an engineer saying that, but okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the difference between, it's also the difference between like GDP per capita as just an abstract figure versus GDP per capita, where the GDP is actually distributed person to person rather than just accreting at the
standard
top.
Standard deviation
right.
versus just an average.
Right.
Yeah, it's the spread. I mean, I am absolutely a leftist. I was raised on the right, let's just say.
Yeah, same.
On the right. Mm-hmm. My transition, like, to the left was really, I started listening to more people.
Yeah.
And I started getting more opinions. And eventually I got to the point where I realized that people are more important than money. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's more about quality of life for everyone. Or at the bare minimum, like, what are we going to guarantee to people? Something like that. Mm.
Well, I'm out of questions. I feel like I now know everything.
I was so hungover, and at first I was like, oh, this is interesting. I can, like, I went up. I was like, oh, this guy's too smart. I don't get what he's saying. And then I was like, this is cool. And then my brain was like, you can't take in more information. So, yeah, that's why I'm, like, tapped out.
All right.
But it was awesome. Thank you so much, Ashley. I don't think we ever introduced our guest.
So let's introduce our guest.
Is your real last name Guy, or are you just saved as Ashley Guy in someone's phone?
No, that's me.
Okay, cool. I can never tell. Okay.
Dr. Guy.
Do you have anything?
That's amazing.
Do you have anything you want to promote? Any projects you're working on? Anything that you want to shout out to our...
I teach at the University of Texas in Arlington. It's an amazing school. It's like top five in the country for diversity. A lot of my teaching is in like the first and second year. I'm really involved in like early education and STEM, things like that. I think it's really exciting. Not to discount the humanities. Everybody needs to be able to think critically. Mm-hmm. And
I want to talk
to
you about STEM.
More.
I work at a school. Sorry, I know you're promoting, but before we let you go,
sure.
I want to talk about what you think about the way that we're focusing kids in STEM programs, especially pushing it on girls. And I think it's good to be like, yeah, girls can do science. You should do these, you know, you should get into this. Girls should mm-hmm. have the confidence, and boys, like, kids should find STEM fun. I wish I did. I think that's great. But I feel like in lower income communities, they push STEM on kids because they're like, you can make money doing this. You know what I mean? And it's really weird the way that, like, it's really weird the way that they're like, all right, well, this is the fix. We're going to, instead of fixing this system that makes it impossible to lead a good life if you're not a scientist, we're just going to force science down these kids' throats, even if they find it boring. Because, like, STEM's great, but also, anyway, what do you think about that?
So, I first of all, totally agree. It's not for everybody.
It's good. Second. It shouldn't be a means to an end. It should just be like, STEM is good. Education is good. Full stop. It doesn't matter if these kids ever make money off of it. Right?
Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
We need people, right? We need engineers and doctors and scientists and all this fun stuff. We need people to go into it who want to be in it, right? And who are competent in it. If it's not your thing, it's not your thing. And no one should ever be made to feel like you're not going to be successful because you didn't.
Right.
Also, I think the danger of it is when you push it on people so much and they don't get education in anything else. Like, I took classes in like theater and acting and creative writing and all this kind of fun stuff. If all you ever get is STEM, then you become very technical, right? And you're very straightforward and maybe you lose kind of the human aspect.
Right.
It also turns you into kind of a maintainer. Like the only thing you're good at is just doing the math and keeping things the way they are.
Not thinking of conceptually like how it things, yeah.
Or like, what problems do we even need to be working on? Mm-hmm. Is there a reason to do this beyond just money? Or mm-hmm. beyond, you know, it's going to make the computer slightly faster, something like that. Mm. I think it's best when people are a little bit more well-rounded and they have a fuller education because they have more ideas on, like, where are we actually going to take this? Or what's the point?
Right.
There's nothing more terrifying than a tech bro who doesn't give a shit about science fiction. Do you know what I mean? It's like if you
doesn't give a shit and has never had anybody there to tell him no.
Yeah, right. and it's like if you have no curiosity about like utopian and dystopian possibilities, like you mm-hmm. are just going to be an absolute tool, personality wise, yeah. but also yep. of capitalists. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely agree. Everybody needs to be. I used to rail against like you know the general education requirements and mm-hmm. all the bullshit that you have to take in high school and stuff. Just, you know, the older I get and the more I think about it, yeah, it is actually good.
Yeah.
It's good. I think, I'm not saying like everybody has to go to college or everybody should go to technical school, but there's a lot of like growing up that happens mm-hmm. in those years. We tend to change our opinions a whole lot. And I think if you're just exposed to stuff, but also exposed to people, that's generally a really good thing.
And going through the hell of like, even if you never learn to do something well and like failing a class or whatever, I think is still a good learning experience. I wish it didn't determine your future so much and that college mm-hmm. was free so that like you could have the opportunity to like be a dipshit at science and like not have it affect your fucking life. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But I do yep. think that like as someone who went to state school and also like was pretty privileged, I'm glad I was an idiot in some classes because learning how to fail is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Trust me. I've failed many, many times.
Yeah.
I've changed my career path more than a couple times.
Yeah.
And it's usually because of I hate this or I suck at this, something mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
And all of those are important.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything else that you would like to promote? Ooh, I'm drunk.
No, I'm good. Thank you guys.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show, Ashley Guy.
This was really fun. Thanks, Dr. Guy.
Come back again. I want to talk to you about all the shit forever and ever.
I have many questions. Zombies are never going to be real, right? Last one. Nope.
No.
Cool. Perfect. Thank you.
All right. See you later, man. Thanks so much.
Yep.
Peace.
Ciao.